our special guest is on the line right now from the Salt Lake Tribune, and I'd like the general to introduce him because he has a special announcement.
You know, Jay, it goes back to the year 2000 as a high schooler at Bountiful High. My senior year, our team's undefeated, and we end up losing in the championship 3 points to Weber. But Jay Drew still chose me as the 4A state MVP. The Deseret News went a different direction, but Jay chose me as state MVP. I never thanked you for that. Jay, thanks for making me the 4A, the Tribune 4A state MVP.
Jay, why did you choose Cameron Jensen as the 4A state MVP back in 2000?
You know, I'm trying to think, that was a long time ago, but Coach Larry Wall, I had a conversation with Larry Wall, and before the playoffs even started, and I remember Larry saying something to the effect that, hey, without this kid, you were the middle linebacker, weren't you?
Yeah, I played full. Yeah, back then we went both ways, so fullback.
Larry had said, without this kid, we wouldn't even be a 500 team. I think, and I did, that just stuck with me. So, you know, Bountiful got to the finals, and who? I'm just curious, Cameron. Where did the who was the Weber the MVP in the Deseret News, and how did his career turn out? Do you have any idea?
Oh, you know, I know his name. I can't remember it right now, but
did he play in college?
No, he didn't. He went and wrestled a little bit somewhere. I actually knew him. I can't remember his name right now, but no, he didn't play college. Yeah, so
you know, I always tell the story that one year Clearfield won it, and the coach talked me into picking this quarterback by the name of Brady Manning. And I said, no, coach, I really like the receiver, a kid named Kevin Dyson. And the coach talked me into taking a kid named Brady Manning, who was heading off to Snow College. Well, I don't think Brady Manning ever played a down of college football, and Kevin Dyson went on to the NFL. So I don't always get it right. But
Jay, many years later, 15 years later, thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You chose wisely.
You chose wisely, just like Indiana Jones chose wisely.
Well, right, I hope you still have that trophy. If I remember right, they almost looked like the Heisman Trophy.
I do still have it. Yeah, it was awesome. It was huge. It was like the Heisman Trophy.
Well, right? He's got a really big trophy case, Jay, so I don't know if he can even find that one. But, I'm sure it still, still hold it close to your heart. I appreciate you bringing that up. Jay Drew on with us here. From the Salt Lake Tribune. Jay, you've been a busy man. You sat down with Bronco. You sat down with Coach Rose. You broke the story on Isaac Nielsen and Frank Bartley transferring. Man, what were your thoughts when you heard the news regarding these two transfers? How'd you find out?
Yeah, I basically found out through a source close to the program. Been a pretty good source over the years, kind of tips me off to things like that. Was I surprised? I guess I was more surprised with the Isaac Nielsen news. With Frank Bartley, I had kind of known after talking to him a couple times during the season that he wanted more playing time, that frankly he thought he was better than the guys that were playing more minutes than him. Frank never lacked confidence, which, I'm not complaining about it is a good thing. So I knew kind of that Frank was a little bit, unhappy. The Isaac Nielsen one really came as a shocker to me, especially given their situation with big men. And, these guys, seven-footers, don't grow on trees, especially, LDS seven-footers that can run a little bit and jump a little bit and with a stroke like Isaac has. So that one did surprise me.
Was Frank Bartley ever like a me-first guy in the locker room? Did you ever feel like he was disruptive or poisonous within that locker room?
No, never. Never did I ever hear that. And the coaches would always talk about how Frank, had a really good work ethic, that he put in the time, that he was working on his outside shot, that he was working on his ball handling. So, I never heard anything of the sort regarding any BYU player on this year's roster. They all seem to get along well and be pretty positive. We've talked before about, Matt Carlino and where there weren't outward signs that he was kind of a, you know, a disruptive force in the inside the locker room. That, you know, that kind of came out a little bit later. But with this year's team, no, nothing that I recall.
Yeah, that's why it's so surprising to me. I look at the five transfers in the last since like around 2010: Matt Carlino, DeMarcus Harrison, Delgado Ambrosino, and Michael Lloyd. I think, you know, most of those guys. I don't know DeMarcus Harrison's situation, but I know that he was, you know, he wanted more playing time. He was not happy about, you know, coming in. He thought he was going to be a contributor right away. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think all those guys were me first guys. Like, I got to get my PT or else I'm not going to be happy. And that's, you know, DeMarcus, like I said, was a little bit different because of the mission thing, and not having a scholarship because he ended up not going on a mission. But I still think things should have could have worked out with him with a scholarship if they really wanted him. But I don't know. What are your thoughts about that? Because Bartley doesn't fit that mold, does he?
No, not really. Yeah, I kind of thought DeMarcus Harrison was kind of a looked really good in practice, and then just could never translate that fully over to the games. You know, and as far as Frank goes, maybe the same thing. He showed flashes where, I mean, he was just brilliant. His freshman year against Utah State, he pretty much almost single-handedly won that game for him at the Energy Solutions Arena. But then, you know, his minutes slowly kind of decreased and went downhill until the latter part of this season, where almost by necessity with Anson Winder's injuries and other injuries, Frank got to play a little bit more. But those other guys you mentioned definitely came in here thinking that they were going to play more than they actually played, especially DeMarcus Harrison, who was really highly recruited. Augie Ambrosino just could never seem to learn the offense, and I had one coach tell me they just basically couldn't trust him to be in the right place at the right time. Is the reason he didn't play more. So I think there's different reasons for each guy, but the underlying thing I think he hit on is they didn't really adapt that team-first attitude that Coach Rose pretty much demands.
Yeah, Bartley really surprised me when I heard his name. You know, looking at it, I heard reports that he wanted to play closer to home. Did that play a role? And also, you have this big surplus coming in. You got Nick Emery, Jared Yates, you got the Celius kid from My Bountiful High School. How much did that play, do you think, in his decision?
You know, I don't know yet. I haven't been able to talk to Frank. He did post that post on Instagram and thanking everybody. And, you know, so it doesn't sound like he's leaving with any bitterness. But it's just, you know, flat out that he wants more playing time. I think we'll kind of learn when we find out where he transfers to, what his kind of agenda is. I've heard that he could end up at UVU, which would kind of kill the talk about him going, you know, getting closer to home in Louisiana. But I know him and Coach Pope were really, really close. And so I wouldn't be surprised if that's where Frank ends up, which I think is the level that where he could really flourish. I think he could be a star at playing for UVU. You know, he'd obviously have to sit out a year and then the final 2 years of his career. I think he could really blossom and be a double-digit scorer there. And, you know, and I think he needs to find his position, though. That's another thing. He's not a good enough ball handler to be a point guard, and he's not a good enough shooter a la Tyler Hawes to play that wing spot. So I think he's kind of stuck in no man's land as far as, or at least he was with BYU, as far as finding a position that he could flourish in.
Jay Drew from the Salt Lake Tribune on with Sierra Cougar Sports ESPN 960. Yeah, I'm not sure what the future is at the big man spot. It seems like they're pretty guard heavy already. I was surprised. I think it will be detrimental to not have Frank Bartley on the floor. I think he was the best athlete on this team, and now you don't really have any lockdown defender. But that's just my opinion. Moving on, though, does Coach Rose have something up his sleeve? Does he have a big man that he's going to be targeting right now? Is there a JUCO guy? Is there another Hafa Araujo out there? Is there a European big man? Is there a fifth-year transfer that can get into BYU and come in and start right away?
You know, I haven't heard of any, and before the player meetings, when I asked Rose that, it was actually the day before signing day. They're actually the signing period, what's kind of called the late basketball signing period, which was it started April 15th. And he basically said, well, we're not even looking at anybody. We've got a full roster and all that. So that would make me think he doesn't really have anything up his sleeve. Incidentally, just today, a player by the name of Sai Tumala announced he was leaving Arizona State, and he's one of those fifth-year eligible guys. BYU offered him. He actually went to Michigan first, a 6'7" wing player, and then he opened up his recruitment, and BYU was in the finalists for him, and he ended up going to Arizona State. I'm not positive. I think he's LDS, but he might be. He's 6'7", so he's not he's not Isaac Nielsen size, but he might be a guy they might have a shot at, if only because they were a finalist before. So that's kind of an intriguing name that's just popped up just today, basically.
So starting lineup's going to be 6'3", 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", 6'8".
Something to that effect, I would think. I don't know. What's Corbin Kafusi listed at? Isn't he
he's about 6'10", so he would be their big. But, it seems like the Kyle Davis, the Jamal Sai Tumala. I mean, I don't know if that's going to be a possibility, but it sounds like they're leaning heavy towards these undersized stretch fours, I guess you can call them.
Yeah, the days of BYU having the the slow lumbering kind of guys are probably gone. And I'm not disparaging guys like, Mark Durant and Russell Larson and Greg Kite, and you could list could go on at guys that were really good, but they're kind
Don't
of...
Don't tell me that, Jay. Don't tell me that. I want to see BYU continue that tradition.
another name that's been floated out there is Jennifer Hampson's brother. I think he's returning home from a mission. He's 7'4", out of Pleasant Grove. He didn't have much of a high school career, but so he would be a pretty big project. But I've seen his name kind of floated out there. Alan Hampson, I think, is his name, as a possibility. So, I mean, I may be totally wrong. They might get a Sean Bradley-type player in here. Who knows?
You broke the news over our airwaves that Utah State might have a sponsorship, and that did come to fruition, a sponsorship for their stadium. I just heard that the University of Houston also has a sponsorship. I think they're getting paid now $1.5 million a year for a credit union there in Texas. Any possibility that BYU in this arms race of college football does something like this, get a sponsor, take that money?
I think it could happen. You look at the Marriott Center. When it was originally named, it was because of money from the Marriott family, but it wasn't tied into their corporate holdings. But sometime along the line, they started putting out the Marriott logo, the same one that's on hotels, on the floor, and it's there now. I don't know when that happened. It'd be interesting to if someone knew when they started using that logo. So apparently, and that kind of tells me that that they're not averse to perhaps someday renaming Lavelle Edwards Stadium, or at least portions of it, or something, the field or something like that. So yeah, I would say it's not out of the question. I would guess BYU would be one of the last to do it, but just because of how they basically operate and that. But as using the Marriott Center as a kind of an example, I think they could do it perhaps in the future.
Hey Jay, you see Utah State doing it, Houston doing it. Do you think this trend will continue in college, in not only basketball stadiums, football stadiums, where this will almost become the norm?
I think so, and I think it's because of this. Well, it's tied to this whole cost of attendance movement, where these athletic departments, they're going to have to come up with more money somehow to to pay costs of attendance, insurance, four-year scholarships, all these other extra benefits for student athletes, that I'm basically in the on the side that they deserve this. This is a long time coming. But that's beyond the point. I definitely think they're going to see this as a new revenue stream. And in my talk with Bronco the other day, he told me that 25 of the 125 Division I football programs actually operate in the black as all. And so, they've got to find new revenue streams, or especially with this cost of attendance, or they're going to get even further in the black. Further in the red, the ones, the 75 or to 100 that are losing money every year. So
is that stat misleading, Jay? I've talked about this on a number of different occasions. Just because, you have state-run schools. They have a certain amount of money that's allotted to them, and if they don't use it, they probably lose it annually. So why wouldn't they almost overspend or be hovering right around there? They're probably going to spend more rather than, eat that money, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, as many businesses will tell you, they have to submit their budget. And, for instance, say us at the Tribune, we have to submit a travel budget every year. And so we don't want to let the higher-ups know, and I'm talking generally for any business, that we need less of a budget the following year. So you tend to, spend every penny of it. Just so the higher ups, don't get ideas of cutting your budget, so to speak, and that's probably what you said. It can apply to college football as well, as they're going to spend every dime they have, just to justify that they need it for the following year,
just to compete. Jay Drew from the Salt Lake Tribune on with us here, Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. Jay, word on the street is that Coach K got to lay his eyes on Frank Jackson at a tournament down in Dallas about a week and a half ago. And rumor has it that he is going to be offering Frank Jackson. Frank Jackson is going to take a little trip down to Duke, and ultimately he will receive an offer. Any chance that either BYU or Utah gets this kid, despite the fact that Duke's probably going to offer this kid?
I would say the chances go way down with when you got Coach K. We saw that with Jabari Parker in a lot of ways. It would be really, really hard for a young man to turn that down. And especially one that has basically, like Frank Jackson, who has reopened his commitment with the saying that he wouldn't be against playing out of state and playing for a major program. So, yeah, I think you get Duke in the picture. You get one of the blue bloods in the picture, like Kansas, Duke, Kentucky, Michigan State, UCLA, and probably Arizona, I would say, is in there as well. You get those involved, and it's very, very hard to win a kid over against those schools.
Yeah, I agree. Coach K has done a lot, and it would be hard to turn that down. Jay, you recently sat down with Bronco. A couple people in the media did. It's interesting to me reading what came out of those meetings, out of that interview. What was hard to put down on pen and paper that you learned from meeting with Bronco?
That's a good question. A lot of us wrote about the Bronco's future and how long he plans to stay, and then also how he's basically reiterating what Tom Homo said about the need to join the Power Five conference and how independence isn't sustainable for longer than 3 years. But one thing, Bronco actually asked me a question, and it was kind of telling in that I think what he was getting at was that he was trying to tell me that he kind of understands the media a little bit better than maybe we think he understands us. So that was something I didn't really write about, but that was kind of an interesting kind of little, 3 or 4 minutes of our conversation about how Broncos kind of gets it now as far as the social media goes and how And basically what he kind of asked me, he says, how is your job different now than it was when you started at the Tribune? And I said, it's, you know, night and day different, and because of the internet, really. And I said, we still try to do good journalism, but it's really harder and harder nowadays in this instantaneous world we live in. So that's kind of, maybe to answer your question, that's kind of one thing we talked about that I didn't really write about, but I thought was really interesting that was kind of on Bronco's mind.
Empathy coming from Bronco Mendenhall to a journalist. All right. I like it. Understanding that, hey, I did not know that.
What world do we live in?
What world? Bronco Mendenhall just flipped my world upside down. He just flipped my world upside down with that comment. Jay Drew, Jay, great insight as always. Thank you for joining us. Please let us know if we can do anything for you. In the meantime, keep it real with all of your articles. You do a great job.
Okay. Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for having me on.